That's the problem too, more or less.
You didn't do this.
Hmm? Ah, except for that thing. Okay. So, let's do that. Okay, so the task is to see how coordinate transformation for contour variance metric with upstairs or with upstairs indices, how that compares. What is this?
You can do it pretty easily given this if you just use the fact that the Kronecker delta is the same in all reference ranges.
Okay.
And then you just write the tilde Kronecker delta and,
okay.
And you equate it to.
Do you want to write it down?
Yes.
So all of you guys have had the general relativity course before, right? So okay, so that this is a review for all of you.
Right, it's scalar, so it's the same. So you just rewrite it. I mean, they start in exactly the same way. Same as numbers. And then the other sheet is distribution, which is.
So sorry, those indices aren't the same. I know they're not.
This is just, you know this, so you can write this. It's not saying this is coming.
Yeah, but I mean, K and L, so this is one of these little L, right?
Yeah, and the second one. But I mean, and then you can just say that if you change, you can say that this is an equivalent statement. You can just factors of four that can't go for. Given this.
That's true, but I don't know what we can learn from this. Sure.
This, from this, we can replace this with this. Mm-hmm. And this transformation. So that we get
but that's the problem, they don't cancel.
Yes.
Yeah, because they're summed over.
They're both on both sides.
But they're summed over, right?
So we should use L then?
Let's see. So. Yeah, well, so L is not summed over, but I is summed over. So I think now maybe it's okay. I think you have too many eyes. The right hand side, yeah. So one of the eyes
is a problem. So I can change this to like an A or a B, just saying it.
Yes, so usually in GR we use different indices for different coordinates. So so you can use, for example, Greek for one coordinate, or or like A, B, C, D for one coordinate and I, J, K for another.
It's all going to work out the same.
Yeah, sure. I see. So that's the transformation that's reasonable. And since all of you have taken derivative before, then you know what's happening. Perfect.
I think this is the important.
That the delta part, that the delta is the same. Okay. Problem 3.
I was going to do maybe worse.
Yeah, okay.
Perfect. Okay, so you're supposed to derive the equation of motion.
Yes, from
lambda is S.
Yeah, I let this be out of that. Mm-hmm. So this is one. So, mm-hmm. so then I don't have to worry about this anymore. It's one. Mm-hmm. And so I have to calculate the radial current. So smaller variations of that.
Yes.
From this variation. So then to calculate this rewriting what's over there. For these two terms. For these two terms to integrate by parts. So then we'll we'll have this derivative. So we'll be left with a delta xa and then delta xp so then three delta xc so it can be factored out. And then we can say that we want the demand is to be zero, so the integrand has to also be zero because it's any infinitesimal change in a half. So
I think that the factor missing in the middle term.
Oh yes.
Yes. Right. Yes. excuse me, we have found LG1 because we have assumed that we have special relativity locally. Is that right?
No, that's just a definition of lambda.
Well, if we define lambda to be the proper time, we are just using special relativity locally, aren't we?
No. It's lambda.
Because we are writing dx squared as minus c squared dt squared.
No, that's not generally true. No, I don't think that's. That's really Minkowski, but that you can just define lambda so that L is 1.
So if L is 1, we are computing the change of L by lambda.
Yeah.
So
what you should do is to, I guess in principle, you should keep L, and you can set it to 1 at the end, yeah. But you shouldn't, I don't think during the variation, you should set it to 1.
You can set L as equal, well, you can't set it, but it's defined as ds d lambda.
Ds d lambda.
Well,
yes. Well, what happens if you keep L actually there? So that's because that is, because you see, it's possible to set lambda equal to s. So I mean, this is not correct, because if you have a metric that's not trivial, this is not true. This is for Minkowski, right?
Yes.
So this is not what we've done. This, you just basically assume there is a lambda because you can choose any parameter lambda. Just chose one to set this to one. You cannot do this while you're varying, because if it is always one, then this is just, this integral doesn't give you anything. Right? So you can do this after variation is done, as the people call on shell, but not off shell, because then you don't have anything. So let's see what difference it makes. I don't think it makes much of a difference actually.
What's right? When you know it's fine. It's the order of assumptions.
It's the question is if we are doing it in the right order or not. The thing that I'm a bit worried about is the integration by parts. But actually, maybe I shouldn't be worried about that. No, the integration by parts has nothing to do with this. So the thing is that you can keep this L here. Keep this L here. And there will be just an extra L up there. And nothing really changes in the calculations. And at the end of the calculation, I set this L, I set it to be 1. Right? So we can get back to this, but let's continue.
We can get extra L and L derivatives, but they're all the same factor on each term.
There will be L derivatives, but they would drop out when you set L equal to 1. If you choose lambda to be S. So let's keep it the way it is. Well, you don't have to include L up there, but then we can go back and see what happens if we had kept L.
Okay.
quite small change because it's disturbing the value from zero.
So it's not zero, but it's not important.
Right.
That's fine, it's, you can use it, but there is not actually one. Finger falling. Well, actually you can just write down the final equation because I mean, so it's okay, so you just did the integration by part.
Yeah.
And you just factor out delta xA,
yeah.
And the coefficient of delta xA must be zero, right?
Yeah.
So that gives you the equation of motion, which is, so you can just write that down. No, it's very exciting.
Thank you. All right.
Is it boring? No, it's
important.
Very important.
and change in this thing so that it just matches the focus of the gradient.
That's good.
And, yeah, and so this system.
That's a gamma, not a G.
Gamma. Yes, capital gamma. So where does the 1/2 come from?
1/2 comes from there's these two terms are the same.
Okay.
So with that, yeah, there's some change in the indices because it's like A and B.
I guess we named them.
And then the 1/2 is skipping because the first one is, the first one is.
The first one.
Yeah. Well, so
it's
C and C, and there's some something.
Essentially, there's a factor of 2 in there. It's equal to 0, so we should.
To just divide by 2, basically, because the second derivative is multiplied by 2. And just divide by four. Okay, good. And then the three other terms is clear where they come. The one of them comes from the first term, and the two other ones come from those two other terms. So good. So this is basically second, Newton's first law, I guess. What is this first law? Second law, yeah. So this is basically the gravitational version of Newton's second law. You have the second derivative, and if s is something like time, and then you have this extra term, this is that gravitational force. But we really got this from the geometric, requirement that this length element, basically, this length is very nice. Now, so what happens? So what would happen if we had kept L? Yeah, what L to the minus 1/2 here? What would happen? Would that have made, would it have made a difference? So the thing is that when you made, when you would have made the integration by part, you would get a time derivative of L. There would be an extra term, which would be the, well, the dL by dS, basically, right? So your equation would have an extra term in it, which will be proportional to dL by dx. If you had L, this L here, for example, let's say L to the minus 1/2. And if you did the integration by part, you put your there would be an L to the minus 1/2 inside here, right? And so that would give you a third term here. So the derivative of G is derivative of G, derivative of X, and then there will be derivative of L. S derivative of L. So in general that would be correct. So, but then if you assume that the L is constant, if you choose lambda or S, if lambda so that L is 1, then those terms would drop out. So you see, there is a recurvatization invariance here. You cannot uniquely predict the evolution in this system because lambda is an arbitrary function. So any, because it lambda drops out here, right? If the lambdas have lambda, that is just the way of parameterizing the curve. So there is no unique way of, getting finding the unique equation for x of a as a function of lambda, because lambda is arbitrary. All you can get is the geometry of this curve, but not the parameter, because that parameter is arbitrary.
Yeah, doesn't that just depend on like the initial condition? What?
No, it's not just the initial condition, because yeah, you might start with some initial condition in some direction. But then somewhere along the way, you just start, you change your definition of lambda, your definition of how you parameterize time along your. I mean, for example, it's like saying that your clock stops working somewhere, or like gets the your battery is dying, for example. So if an observer is moving, at some point its battery is it has a battery clock, and the battery starts going weaker, so clock starts dying. Another observer might have the same initial condition, but has a good clock with longer battery life. So you wouldn't see the same histories, although they see the same external field, it's just that the internal clock works different ways. That's why they see different, have different lambdas.
Yeah.
So there's nothing physically different between these two, it's just how you decide the parameters. That's why this would just, you would, this wouldn't uniquely, if you kept L here, you wouldn't be able to solve this basically completely.
I didn't use proper time when I got the GPS.
Well, but you would have dl by ds.
Yeah, in the end they all cancel.
Oh, sorry, dl by.
Yeah, d lambda by ds.
dl by d lambda. So there's an extra, there would be an extra term there, which is dl by d lambda, proportional dl by d lambda. And you wouldn't know what to, I don't think.
They cancel in the end. You factor.
They cancel? I don't think they cancel.
So what I did was I set, the square root term to ds d lambda. So you get d lambda ds terms in there, and then in the end they all fall out. Unless I did something wrong, which is quite possible.
Yeah. I'm suspicious about that because I think the history will be different if you use a different clock. It's not that you're gonna get the same equation. You're gonna get a different equation. You're gonna get a different solution if you have a different clock.
They're all multiplied by the clock, though, so the clock factor drops out.
But it's not just a factor. It's not, unless you assume it's a constant, L is a constant. If you assume L is a constant, then it's just a factor. But if L is not a constant.
I don't think I assumed it was a constant.
Okay, so let me give you this example. Flat space, and you have a particle that's moving with velocity, with a constant velocity. But then imagine that your clock is it starts slowing down. Okay? So let me write it down. Make sure I write it down. Let me write it down here. You have t tilde, which is t, say, minus alpha t squared. So you have a fixed, you have particle which is moving constant velocity x is on. But then you have this kind of this funny clock which starts slowing down. Okay. So it's good, but then as time increases it becomes slower than the true clock. And this is just a special routine. And just for simplicity, let's call this dt tilde. I mean, this is just a sign that works. What this tells you is that if this becomes t times t plus, t tilde plus alpha t tilde. So you don't really have an acceleration in this coordinate. You don't really have an acceleration in terms of the true time or Galilean time. But if you had a good clock, but just the fact that your clock, so you, this is one way. To parameterize, you can parameterize that your, you can choose any lambda, of course. If you have the wrong clock or a bad clock, then you're going to see acceleration.
I don't disagree, but I'm saying that you also see there's also a factor on your Christoffel.
So you're saying Christoffel symbol is going to be different.
Also different, but different by the same amount, so that they factor out at the end. It's like you have a coefficient.
So are you saying you're going to have different Christoffel? The Christoffel symbol doesn't depend on lambda.
Not Christoffel itself, but the term that is the second term, you're going to have the same factor up front. That's what I think happens. So basically, you have like a coefficient times both of them. And if it's set to zero, you can just divide by that coefficient.
I see. So you're saying that if I keep the L here,
you get the same factors in the end on both.
Like we have an L back to the minus one.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, something like that.
So if
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the fact that you observe.
I guess that's not consistent quite with what I'm saying, because your Christoffel symbol wouldn't be the same if you had a distant transformation. So you might, it's Christoffel symbol is not a tensor. So you, in one frame it might be zero, in another frame it doesn't. Okay. So then it, I guess next time I say if you keep them, then they drop out. So that might well be the two terms cancel each other. In the L dot term, they cancel. Good. So what else is there? So we have to. Then there is the covariant derivative. So what is covariant derivative? Are you going to tell us?
Oh, what is
it? Yes. It's basic. It's like regular derivative, but it's an extra term with that goes gamma.
Yeah. You have that term because now the geometry is not flat, but somehow it's your standard.
Okay, we have only 15 minutes, so let's see. I mean, it's defined here in equation 517, what you call covariant derivatives.
Well, in part A, it wants us to show that the normal, the special relativistic derivative is not invariant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to define another form of derivative again.
Yeah.
And so it asks us to show that this new kind of derivative defined this way is invariant.
It's invariant and it's a tensor, basically. So, Horace, do you know how to do this? Or?
I do this, but I'm not sure which.
It's asking to define.
So it's semicolon derivative thing. Semicolon.
Which question are we trying to answer now?
This is still part B. This is the same question. It's the same part.
So show that.
Okay. Good, good. So do we know why this is a tensor?
We should write the transformation for the connections.
Mm-hmm.
We know the connection is just a function of the matrix.
Yeah.
We know the transformation of the matrix, so we can find the transformation of the connections.
Mm-hmm.
And then putting it in that shows to be united.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's just by plugging it in. But I mean, one way to see it is that, I mean, just by looking at that equation, UK is a tensor of course that we know, and this equation is also covariant because you derived it from a geometrical constraint, geometrical requirement. So that means that UI semicolon K must be a tensor as well. Alright. So just at this, so this equation is the same in all frames. Because you didn't assume any particular frame. So that in that sense that guy should be a tensor. U I semicolon. K must be a tensor. Because basically satisfy the same equation. So that's really the definition of a tensor. It should satisfy the same equation. So I mean that's not the proof really, but I mean that's more of a consistency finish. The regular square thing is what Farrell would mention. It just show that by its definition, if you plug gamma in, then it satisfies the same transformation that you expect tensors. So that we're not gonna have time for.
It's long.
I did it
by saying that this whole thing was a tensor because it has to be from the tensorial nature of the equation. And
yeah.
Then I derived the transformation based on the transformation of the partial derivative. It was a lot simpler.
Yeah.
Going through the GOK.
Well, I don't think it would be complete because I mean
it's not rigorous.
I mean this equation is a vector. Like you're talking about a tensor, and like two index tensor, I guess, in a sense. So, just in terms of the amount of information that there is, that you cannot prove that all the components of that two index tensor behave the same as they should, because this equation just tell you what four of the components, but that has like 16 components. This tensor has 16. So, but this is a consistency condition, I think. The proof that right way of doing it is just to plug in and show that it satisfies that. So it's very non-trivial. It's very non-trivial.
Well, I did it complete then. I tried to do it that way, but there's too many mistakes.
Yeah. Well, it's good to do it once in your lifetime.
I already did it once in my general relativity course.
Yeah, I'm doing it again. I did it like 2 years ago.
Okay, maybe twice. Because, yeah, I mean, then it goes into your long-term memory. Once you might forget. But, okay, so let's decide what we should be doing. So thank you, Horace. And let me, so the part C and D are definitions of covariant derivatives of a tensor. And the Riemann tensor.
The Riemann tensor is a good thing to go through.
They are both good things to go through, especially the Riemann tensor. The problem is that we have 5 minutes, so I guess we should probably delay this until next session. So, and I forgot to prepare new problems for you.
Maybe just have us finish up this one.
Yes. Yes. That would be nice. Yes. So
I want to give you an extra problem.
That's one more problem.
Yeah, so...
But not one of the kind of the containerization problems.
So what is the problem with the containerization? That it's too long.
It was too long and the equations didn't make sense, at least the equations in the book.
Uh-huh.
So
so you had to come up with your equations?
Parts to it. You know, they were all like, you know, they weren't all part questions. They were like almost full
questions.
Full questions, yeah.
That question was a question.
Yeah, so I guess that we should really break up, but some of these questions are just too long. So I guess that's what I tried to do. I didn't give you all the all the parts of the question.
I thought this was something that was closer to what you
stand on.
But still, I guess we're halfway through as well. But I guess you guys just missed almost all of you did the first three problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's only the problem for that. That we need to do. The one thing that is significantly missing from this problem set is no, actually it's general it's Einstein equation. So if you want to summarize general relativity, the first part is kinematics, which is basically what it's just a convention and that's geometric. All of these are geometrical quantities. It's a differential geometry, if you will, geometry in weird, funny spaces. So that's the first part. That's not the physics part, that's just the math part. The second part is...
the energy moment.
It's basically what is the right geometry to work and how it's related to matter distribution. So that they are completely different parts. But I guess the problem I had is that you should develop a lot of formalism in order to be able to understand how the Einstein equation works. So the Schwarzschild metric gives you some sort of a bridge between the two. It's a kinematics problem because you have a metric and you look at properties around it, but it also tells you what matter really what is. How does mass affect its surrounding area, a point mass affect the surrounding area? And it really stems from this connecting with Newtonian gravity. Well, I guess we have right there. So it's in a way it's the generalization of the kind of metric that we wrote down, we wrote there in the board. It's 1 + 2 phi is the metric basically. And Schwarzschild is a slightly more sophisticated way of writing that, or generalizing that, when phi gets large and relatively small. So that's really what you need to know for most of general relativity, is that how metric around point masses look. And you can go a long way with just knowing that. So the question is, what is the best way of getting at Einstein equations? So I guess that these guys are coming in. So for next week we're gonna go through parts like a C and D of problem 3, and then the Schwarzschild metric. You're gonna finish that soon. And I might send you a new problem set which has to do with gravitational waves. And hopefully I'm trying to make it as short and concise as possible. But I'll do my best. And well, thank you very much.